Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gray Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Breakdown and with no
playing baseball. I'm being serious here. Because the 90 strike lockout really hurt baseball. This one could destroy baseball. Now, I know y'all are laughing. No, this ain't funny. Because the owners are playing hardball. But it didn't. Meanwhile, the hot dog vendors, the coffee vendors, the popcorn vendors, the cotton candy vendors, they don't get paid. They don't get paid. I'm just saying. NHL last night, the Rangers cool off the Hot Devils 3-1. Is that a bad? 2 points. Andre Zizekov scored a winning goal for the Canes in a 3-2 victory over Pittsburgh Penguins. Stamkos deals a blow for the Bolts as they defeat Detroit 3-1. And the Kings, Victor Arvidsson scored 2 goals over the Columbus Blue Jackets. 4-3 victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets. NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks defeat the Chicago Bulls. 118-112. With Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 34 points. Maxi gets Matthews going nuts with the Sixers. And the Sixers win over the Cleveland Cavaliers. 115-119. 125-119. And the New York Knicks battle the Pacers with 1 second lead. The New York Knicks led the whole second half. The whole second half. With 1 second to go, 1 second to go, and Johnson shoots a 3-pointer from a 3-point arc. The Phoenix Suns win the game, 115-114. Zion Williamson will return to the Pelicans next week. And in other news, Brittany Griner gets arrested in Russia as he tried to leave Russia on marijuana charges in her suitcase as he tried to leave Russia with the war going on. So there you have Friday night lights. We'll come back with the other news after these messages.
BlackAthlete.com. Looking for the definitive source for information? BlackAthlete.com, that's where it's at. From Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, to Michael Jordan and Shaq, football, basketball, baseball, and everything in between. We focus on all the major players and stories, daily features, video on demand, and Black Athlete newspapers coming to a city near you. Tired of the same old sports programming? Check out BlackAthlete.com. Sports the way you like it.
A place of
see how the Czech Republic, older than Sweden, will not play Russia in the World Soccer matches. That was a mute point after the World Soccer Federation banned Belarus and Russia. This is going to get ugly in the world of world news as the war continues in the Ukraine. 40 mile truck caravans are pressing to the capital city, and the Western world can do nothing but sit and watch. Meanwhile, in the United States, politics has got uglier too. President Biden making a State of the Union address, and two ladies decided to be the stars of the show, interrupting the president twice. Now, it's interesting that Republicans can interrupt a Democratic president, but Democrats cannot interrupt a Republican president. What I mean is this. When President Obama made his State of the Union speech, one esteemed colleague stood up and said, "You lie," in the middle of his speech. Here we go again. This year, these two ladies interrupt Biden when he was talking about veterans and PTSD. Republican Party has to come to a sense. Look, we can disagree all day. That's fine. But you have to be civil about disagreement, which Republicans refuse to do. Now, these two ladies need to be censured. Learn a lesson. The Republican Party won't do that because they ran out of headlines. Enough. I am sick and tired of this. The guy in Kentucky, 12 years ago, where is he now? After that outburst. And these two ladies were going into too. 3 or 4 years down the road, people will forget who they are or what they did. Have you seen the Paralympic Games lately? I haven't. The Paralympic Games opened in Beijing on Thursday night. And the world didn't even notice. I can't tell you who's winning gold medals. I can't find it. The Ukrainian team comes in and is a bird nest. And tears erupt. And that didn't really do it because these are things and stated that he backed the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So when the Ukrainian team entered the bird nest, many thought it would be complete silence. It wasn't. Okay, news of the week. We only know about me canceling the meeting with the players. lockout is to destroy the game. New York Mets hired Elizabeth Benn as the director of Major League Operations, the highest paid female in Major League Baseball. Now, why can't they do this with African Americans? They can do it for females, they can do it for African Americans. Warriors lose on Sunday to Dallas 107-103, and that was last week. Last week they had a big lead going into the weekend. This weekend, guess what? The Memphis Grizzlies, Denver Nuggets, whoever else is behind the Warriors are right on their tail now, because the Warriors have lost 7 of 9. Draymond Green is still a no-show. They're waiting for the rookie center to come back. And there's 20 games left in the season. There should be a worried look on Steve Kerr's face. Because Memphis is coming. Memphis is the most improved team in the NBA. Memphis has 2 great players. And I believe that Memphis is the scariest team in the NBA right now. On Monday, Derek Jeter stepped down from the Florida Marlins CEO, and he did not see his vision of the Marlins, and the owners went their own way. Meanwhile, the Marlins are the fourth worst team in the baseball. And they still make money. The Baltimore Orioles, the Cincinnati Reds, the Detroit Tigers, they are, if you put all those teams together, it still could come up with a winner. Russia is getting the backlash of their invasion with the ban of the World Cup in 2022, the ban of international hockey, the ban of world skating. So they are excluding the Russian athletes completely out of the sports world. Mr. Murray and the Arizona Cardinals are loggerheads, and Murray might not be a Arizona Cardinal for long, because Arizona could go a different way. If Murray were Caucasian, this would not be a question. An African-American quarterback had to sit down and take whatever comes. The circus in Green Bay, once again, with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers can do as anything he pleases. And nobody says boo. Murray made the complaint. And they got real out of doubt. This is the hypocrisy of the United States. Once again, Aaron Rodgers is a spoiled brat. The more that he speaks, the more I think he's a spoiled brat. Just like Djokovic. the vaccine, not vaccine players. So Djokovic will get away with this. And see, I don't mind. Don't get me wrong here. I don't mind that you don't want to get vaccinated. That's fine. That's your choice. But when it affects other people around you, when it affects players around you, we got a problem. Smiling Los Angeles Lakers waived DeAndre Jordan and signed guard D.J. Austin. The Lakers' problem is chemistry. The Lakers' problem is they're too damn old. The Lakers' problem is you have too many Indians, too many seasonal Indians. So the Lakers, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. That's how bad they are right now. LeBron James, the greatest player on the planet. Westbrook, the greatest triple-double player I've ever seen. You can't put these guys together. And then you have a bench. What do you do with a bench? And older than his daughter. You can't do that. The Golden State Warriors are doing it the right way. They have a core's daughters. Draymond Green. Klay Thompson, Curry, and they have a strong bench, role-playing bench. The Lakers can't do that because they're too damn old. I'm just saying. On Tuesday, the NBA combine started at Lucas Stadium, and the WNBA tried to terminate the Liberty charter flights that they took in 2021. I don't know why they have regular flights for a WNBA team. In fact, NBA teams have already. Yeah, Moran. Mr. Moran. Scored 52 points against Santa Spurs. Mr. Moran. Could be the new face of the NBA in the Memphis Grizzlies. As he's gone nuts this week. NFL news, Zach Prescott had shoulder surgery this week, not major, same thing with Jimmy G, shoulder surgery, and Jimmy G will most likely not be a Niner, even though I think they should keep him. They will now lean on Lance. There's a Luka killer, Lance. And by an older, deeper quarterback. Wisconsin beat Purdue on Tuesday night. Take the lead in the Big Ten. Arizona beats USC and they win the Pac-12 title. As we go into March Madness, yes, March 5th, and we get ready to rock and roll. The Vermont Catamounts win the American East Conference on Tuesday. Middle Tennessee State wins the Conference USA Wednesday. In the Mid-South Conference, if this virus be referenced. And the next day, North Carolina A&T be referenced. So both of the old MEAC teams win their games and will most likely be in the playoffs. On this day, Wednesday, in 60 years, Will Chamberlain scored 100 points. Will Chamberlain did a feat that nobody, I don't think anybody would ever come close to getting to. He hit 21 free throws, which he never did, missing only 4. And against the New York Knicks, go figure. I remember as a nine-year-old kid laying in bed with my old portable radio, which I dropped 1,000 times and didn't break. You drop a radio down to you. And see what happens. It was going little pieces all over the place. But that radio I dropped a gazillion times, it still worked. Will Chamberlain never realized the historical record until 15 years later. He said, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. But he didn't take it seriously until 15 years later. Now, Kobe Bryant got 80 in the last year playing, and Curry got 50 in the All-Star game. Klay Thompson got 60, but 100 is going to be very hard to do. And this is the reason why it's going to be very hard to do. Will Chamberlain played 48 minutes a game. That includes the overtime game. Nobody plays that down. The stamina, the strength, the courage to do that. So Will Chamberlain, I think, has a record that will not ever be broken again. Even with the 3-point, I still can't do it. The IOC also banned the Russians from the Paralympic Games on the last second call. On Thursday, KD comes back to the Brooklyn Nets, who lose to Miami on Thursday night. NCAA is always one weekend of upsets. The last weekend was it. 7 of the top 10 teams lost, and the polls went nuts. Only 1 and 2 stayed, 1 and 2. That was Gonzaga and Arizona. It stayed 1 and 2. Everybody else was up and down the rankings. Grambling football team got tied with our Browns. The offensive coordinator, after 4 days of work, protests from Grambling State alumni and quarterback and head coach Doug Williams was very, very powerful. unranked Colorado defeat number 2 Arizona. Tennessee upset number 3 Auburn. Michigan State upset number 4 Purdue. Baylor defeat number 5 Kansas. Arkansas beat number 6 Kentucky. And TCU beat down the Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Duke goes to number 1 spot in the ACC, and they play North Carolina right after I get out of the air. At 3 p.m., it'll be Duke against North Carolina. Coach K's last game in Cameron Stadium. On the ladies' side, the Lady Tigers of Princeton of the Ivy League go undefeated and win the Ivy League title. Fairfield Lady Dags win the Metro Atlantic regular season title. The Lady Bears of Baylor end the season Sunday with a home game against Texas Tech. I think this is a tie for the Big 12 title. And victory over number 8, Iowa State Cyclones, 87-62. MEAC Lady Bison travels to Upper State, while Lady Bears of Morgan State travel to Copper State to end the season heading into the FBC title. MEAC title. Norfolk State men clinch at least time a regular season at Host Buckeye Central. An hour to end the season and this year's season. Lady Lukies will now go to the Quad Cities and start the Arch Madness. And I predict the University of Northern Iowa Panther men to take the MVC crown on Sunday on CBS. So watch on Sunday on CBS. That's right. Jackson State Tigers and their season host Arkansas 5 Bluff and Missouri Valley State. Jackson State ladies win the swing title, regular season title. By 12, it's Lady Cardinals. When they came last night, they blew a Colorado last night. I mean, literally blew up because they had a real tough game with Colorado about 2 weeks ago. Stanford made sure this time that Colorado got the message, you ain't winning up in anything. Yes, sir. So, Lady Cardinal, we're going to the Pac-12 tournament. Number 1, as Dara Vandermeer wins her 1,000th game at Stanford University. And think about that. Winning 1,000 games at one university. Not many people can do that. So congratulations to the Lady Cardinal. And good luck representing the Bay Area. Also, tonight, the University of San Francisco. If they win tonight, it'll be the first time since 1998 that San Francisco Dons will be in the NCAA tournament. So go Dons if you win tonight. we need more representatives for the Bay Area. The Golden Bears of Berkeley, they stink. We got a Michael in the house. You there? Hello, brother. How you doing?
What's going on, G? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. What's up, bro?
Yeah, I'm in transition. I was just listening to what you were saying about Tara Vanderveer. You know, that is pretty good. You know, there are not as many men or women.
You're going
to
get it out. You get it out clear.
Yeah. And she's got a couple of national titles, so she has definitely made her bones. I mean, she's a legit coach.
I think Tara Vanderveer does not get the respect that she deserves because the Cardinals, year after year, the Cardinals always crush the Pac-12. She doesn't get respect.
That's true. I think there's a meat in that sandwich. You know about Pat Summit, you know about Ben Stringer. Vanderveer really doesn't get much talk. And like I said, she's won at least two. So she definitely belongs up there in that group.
Well, I think that she's coming to the end of her career too, which is really interesting. All the old guard are leaving the NCAA, which is very interesting.
Well, it's a transitional period. Not just in the fact that a lot of these coaches are going to be old heads, but I mean, also in the fact that women's basketball is taken seriously. I don't mean seriously with an S. I mean seriously with a dollar sign.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We see how the cash not only flows in the men's tourney, but it now flows in the women's tourney. And there may be three or four female programs that were able to generate that kind of juice now, where before there was not at all, with the exceptions of like Tennessee, Connecticut. But now there's a bunch of schools that can lay claim to having a consistent program that'll produce a possible champion.
Well, I'm very happy because by Lady Zaluki, as I use Zaluki, they have won the Missouri Valley Conference. Thank you, Lady Zaluki. I'm very proud of you girls. So they go into the Missouri Valley Conference number one seed. So if they don't win the conference tournament, they probably would still be going to the NCAA. So go, Zalukis, go. It's very interesting. Michael, the NBA, what is going on with the Golden State Warriors and the LA Lakers, which will be on TV tonight? Both of these teams are struggling.
You know, I'm not sure, to be totally honest with you. I haven't really been on board with NBA stuff since this whole Ukraine crap started off. There's all kinds of crazy stuff being said. Apparently, I don't know if we talked about it at the top of the show, but Brittany Griner, apparently about a month ago, got arrested in Russia.
We talked about her early in the show. She got arrested for marijuana charges, allegedly.
Yeah. Now, I can say this because I've lived abroad. There used to be a commercial, or a bunch of commercials, I used to say, if you get arrested over there, and basically, they're telling you the truth. Because you don't have any kind of or anything that would protect you. You have the mercy of the commissary or what country it is. And if you're in a country that's very strict like Singapore.
Slater, the players rep for the Giants, he raised the point that because April is not a big money month for the owners in terms of making money, the main profitable part of the season is July, August, September, maybe, that the owners can afford to not open for April. It hurts the players far more. My point is nobody cares. They have killed baseball.
Let me stop you right there. I want to make this very clear, again, not one fan can go to a game a complete year, and these owners will make the money that they were supposed to make. Why? Because they had TV contracts. Why? Because they have the insurance. Why? Because they have all this stuff is already pre-planned. They go a whole year with nobody there.
You know, and all that being said, I don't perceive any hunger. I don't perceive anybody jonesing for baseball, even if they've been absent because of COVID for a year. Again, it's a sport that occupied a place in history, but it's a past place in history. It's an artifact of a past time. The national pastime is exactly that. It's past time. It's like a dinosaur.
Baseball shoots itself in the foot. This is what I'm talking about. I shoot yourself in the foot. Major League Hockey has changed the game. Major League Basketball has changed the game. Major League Football has changed the game. Baseball refuses, refuses to change the game. Baseball refuses to use computers or use technology to improve their game. They refuse to do this. So if I am 13 or 14 years old, and I don't want baseball.
Right.
I'm not doing it.
Right. No, it existed. I've said this before. It existed from a point in the past when there was nothing else going on. The only thing you had in your town was a baseball game, and that's where people would go. But now there's so much else going on, so much stuff that grabs the attention. And people even complain about the length of a game. Now, personally, I'm kind of happy. When I go to a concert and the performer leaves the stage after 75 minutes, I kind of feel a little cheated. I'm just getting into the show, and now the show's over. I don't have a problem with a baseball game that lasts 3 hours. I'm getting my money's worth. You know, I've already blown my afternoon. Let me invest 3 hours and get, you know, my full money's worth. But the attention span is not there. People don't want to put 3 hours into watching a game.
Baseball, yeah. See, this is the thing that really irritates me about baseball. about strikeouts and home runs. How much about that? Strikeouts and home runs. Because ain't no lady. I want to beat somebody over there and begin. Stop it. You need number one. I said this in my articles many times. My articles. Number one, beat the game up. Number two, obey the rules. Number three, stop with the invisible rules. The rules that were handed down from 1940. And those rules. You're telling me a guy hits a home run, and this guy will be up a tree. Guy hits a home run, you're throwing at him? Are you crazy? What's wrong with you?
Well, let's go back to one of the traditionalists that you love, Bob Gibson. Would Bob Gibson not have done that?
Bob Gibson, okay, see, this is the difference. When Miggy Cabrera hits a home run, still throwing at him for no reason at all. Bob Gibson, when he threw at you, it was a purpose for it. The purpose was to get you off of that plate. That's why Bob Gibson did what he did. Not because he hit a home run. Hello?
I see. Right. Let me ask you this. Do you think baseball is beyond being salvaged?
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't know whether Mike will agree with me with this. I'll tell you this. If this strike goes beyond April 31st, it's over. It's over. Major League Baseball is killing itself.
Gary, you know what? The thing, and I say, hey, Art, but the thing that bothers me with this baseball thing is that there's some meat in Art's sandwich. It says past time. It is. When's the last time? No, seriously. Think about it. When's the last time you saw a bunch of kids line up and get together and play a game of baseball?
I'm not talking about
league ball, because, you know, obviously.
I know.
You know, a regular pickup game on baseball with people bringing bats, gloves, and stuff like that. Or even stickball, which is what we used to do back in the city. You know, you get your broomsticks and cut them off and stuff like that. You get Spalding, and there you go. You got a game. You know, it just doesn't work like that. Football's faster, and it's more appealing to the eye. Basketball's faster, and it's more inclusion, because a lot of people can play basketball. They may not be able to do all things great, but one might be able to shoot well. One might be able to dribble well. They feel like they're part of the game. Soccer is now replacing what used to be played on baseball fields everywhere.
Yep.
You got a whole different ethnic flavor coming in now, and people who grew up playing baseball ain't playing it no more. And it's because they don't know how to promote or cater to their fans. I'm not talking about the old ones who wax poetic and shit. I'm talking about kids. That's who they use the market to.
Well, let me give both of you an example of why baseball is failing. When I was a kid, there was bat day. When I was a kid, there was ball day.
Right.
When I was a kid, there was a hat cap day.
They give us a customer name.
Look at the schedule of the San Francisco Giants. Right now. Do you see a ball day?
No, it's all about taking, Gary. It's all about extracting. It's all about extracting wealth from the fans. There's no give back. You talk about when I was a kid, you used to be able to buy Wonder Bread or another brand, Fisher Bread, that's in the East Coast, New Jersey. And they would have, like, on the end wrap, you know, where they seal the package. You know, you could collect these things, pictures of the New York Yankees back then.
I mean, now,
you know, and, you know, the whole number of black athletes in the game is a separate issue, but there's no picture of Buster Posey, you know, on the end of my Wonder Bread or my Oro Wheat or anything. You know, so my mom's making me a grilled cheese sandwich or a peanut butter and jelly. I don't see a picture of, well, anybody for any sport. But that used to be, and that's the cheapest way you can go. Just, you know, put the picture out there. I mean, it's wonderful. Maybe I get, you know, a box of Wheaties with, you know, LeBron on it or somebody. But, you know, what about the rank and file day-to-day star? That's how you cultivate your players and your interests among kids.
They don't think it's worth investing in the kids by promoting to them. That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's all about extracting wealth. They're not going to give a cap. They want you to buy the cap, buy the swag, you know, and even, you know, why they come up with all these different variations on the jersey. So you have to buy all these expensive uniforms, you know, to get a complete set of, you know, game-ready jerseys.
The NBA is guilty as charged. You have eight different Golden State uniforms. What are you doing?
Hey, let me talk about Golden State. Reading your notes, Gary, to prep for the show here. And I know you start out at the beginning of the week and you run it through the end of the week, but at the beginning of this past week, you were having Golden State comfortably sitting in second place in its division. By the end of the week, it was slipping. And now on radio Friday morning, you know, we were looking at Phoenix challenging them. Now people are saying not only Phoenix, but Memphis and Minnesota also challenging. underneath the basket for those folks who would take advantage of that.
But he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that. That's the beauty of the NBA. You've got a galaxy of stars, and you've got teams. You've got teams that can utilize every one of them.
Which one? Michael. This is where I go nuts. Why would the LA Lakers get nine guys over 35 years old? Why would you do that?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter what you do, it's the why they did it. We know why they did it. The fact is, they're hoping that their body clocks will outlast their investment.
Yeah.
Because when Father Time catches up to your behind, it's a wrap. And they got a whole lot. They got a whole lot of old cats. You know, this is like the Uncle Drew movie. Got all these old dudes who can ball, who know that they've got a limited lifespan in which to get this done. They're up for it, but we don't know if their bodies can handle it over the course of an entire year. And that's what this is about. If they buy themselves another title.
No, you can never count out with the cash cow.
That's right. He is the cash cow. But even cows have to come home. He's a cash cow. And because of that, the NBA is keeping an eyeball on the future. Now, we saw the Milwaukee Bucks win a title. You know, they basically had two players. And one of them is a legit star, the Greek Freak. But if L.A. is gone, the whole focus shifts. And the league survives because before, there had to be a marquee team that would keep the beat throughout the course of the season. You know, that one team that everybody wanted to see, either win or lose, but there was always one team. That ain't there no more. The Lakers are like an all-star team. They're great players, old players, and in a short series, they may prove to be worth doing damage. But now you got all different variables in the mix. You got the referees on which you can never eliminate, and injuries, just time on their bodies. You know, you can't factor that in. So if L.A. does win and make it to another title, yeah, they'll be doing it limping in. They won't be steamrolling over anybody. They'll be content to just get the W and move on, survive in advance, as they say.
Well, that's gonna be very interesting to watch.
Well, you know, there's one thing about being in your early 30s.
They got work to do.
Yeah, you know, if you're in your early 30s and you're healthy, you are a healthy man. When you're 19 coming into the league, you are a youth, really.
Yeah.
You may have
a
lot of spring, a lot of bounce, a lot of energy, but you are a youth. You're a youngster. Your body hasn't even finished growing. You don't even understand, you know, the game. Klay Thompson, basically, with 2 years out, has to relearn the game. Part of the reason they're bringing him back slowly is so he relearns the game, a game he's played his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a healthy 30-year-old, I'll say, 33, maybe starts to stretch it a little bit, but you're a man. Like LeBron. LeBron's a man, you know, in a child's game. I mean, he's just physically different from anybody else. And, you know, and he manifests that to a far greater degree than anybody else. But other people who can bring their full manhood into the game, you know, a healthy 33-year-old can take out a 19-year-old. Sometimes just on savvy and knowledge alone. Spanish people have a phrase. I won't say it in Spanish, but it says something like, "The devil knows more because he is old than because he is the devil."
Mm-hmm.
A 90-year-old can play every day, where a 30-year-old cannot. It's a give and take there, because in the playoffs, the object is to get to the playoffs. Why? Because you play every other day.
Right.
And no back-to-back days.
Yeah, but yeah, I'll give you another parable here. You heard the one, I'm sure, about the old bull and the young bull sitting up on the hill.
Yeah.
And the young bull sees a bunch of cows down below, go, "Hey, let's go down and get one of them." The old bull says, "Let's walk down and get all of them."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Gary and I were talking about, and we had a bit of a disagreement. I had, with my thinking was around James Harden going from Oklahoma City to where Houston, and then to Brooklyn, and now to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that amount of movement. My question to Gary, does that diminish his legacy, that he never stayed any place to really get it done? And that can't all be put on him, because I think Gary feels that in the days of Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook was the kind of, the loose personage there, who was flawed personally, let's say, and
right.
wasn't going to build a team. But
mm-hmm.
I was looking at Carmelo Anthony, who's a Laker. 19
yep.
years in the league, 14 years
yep.
in the league, an eternity. 33 years old. When he
yep.
first came out to Denver, and he was with Denver for a good long time. He wasn't there for a week. I think he was there for six seasons. But
right.
the perception was that he never quite got it done there. And then he started moving around, and I think he's been with six teams now, finally
mm-hmm.
landing in the Laker roster. How do you look at a guy like, and the word I use, and Gary objected to the word, was a vagabond, a guy who becomes kind of a vagabond moving around the league. What do you think of the legacy of a Carmelo?
Well, you see, to call him a vagabond isn't fair, because nobody's really punishing him for longevity. And that's what the word sounds like, that he's being punished because he's been around a while. But the bottom line is, he can shoot. He came into the league scoring. He can still score. He can score 10 points in his sleep. And as needs of the business go, at least in the case of the NBA, if you can score, you got a job. We've seen players throughout their careers make their bones doing just that, just being able to score. And if a team felt that their skills were necessary to help them succeed, they used them. So what we got here with the Lakers, to go back to them, is we got a collection of old folks. And now we know they're not old in terms of actual age, but from what they have to do, for what they're expected to do, they're old. You know, and in order for them, and they're not going to get young anytime soon. We know that they have to utilize themselves, take care of their bodies, do what they normally do to an nth degree so they can maintain a modicum of success. You know, nobody's going to babysit them. They're going from the standpoint of, you are all grown-ass men. We expect you to behave a certain way. We expect you to be ready on game day, and we expect you that when the time is called on you to do what you need to do, that you can rock the house. That's not asking for a lot in the minds of some, but ultimately, that is what they're asking.
Well, Carmelo Anthony, by himself, guy in the New York Knicks as well. Because it wasn't for Carmelo, they would not be in the playoffs. So, I mean, that word that you use, vagabond, the reason why I don't like it is because it means no direction or no guys, that's why I like that word.
Let me put it this way. If he had no direction, it would be because the coach didn't know what direction to point him toward. They were given instructions on what to do. Like I'm saying, Carmelo, we know what your rep is, your score. You got 15 minutes a game in which you can come in and provide offense. If you remember the Detroit Pistons and Vinnie Johnson, they used to call him Microwave. What was your job, Vinny? Score. When I come in, I got to
score.
Right.
That's all he did.
When I come in, I got to score. And they called him Microwave because he could heat up real quick, literally.
Yes, sir.
and provide offense for his team. That's what needs to be. That's what needs to be defined. Once your role is clear in terms of what it is you're supposed to do, you got to do that. And there are some teams that are smart enough to know which athletes are able to do it and which ones aren't. And that's
the
difference between being.
I think Michael, I think that's an important point about Carmelo too. I think there were people early on, and again, you know, the player gets tagged, another word Gary hates, we've discussed this, gets tagged with the malcontent label, but it may be because there's not appropriate coaching there to direct him.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
I think we saw this also in DeMarcus Cousins. He gets kind of tagged with that same label coming out of Sacramento.
He's a great player. Mm-hmm. He should have been a great player. He never got the credit he should have gotten. And I'm glad Art brought up Carmelo because it brings up another point. Carmelo came in to pros after leading Syracuse to a title. Now, he did this when he was basically a baby. And he never really got credit for leading his team the way he did in college like that. All they've heard from him in the pros is he's good, but, you know, he can score, but, you know, there's never been the leadership component that, hey, you know, when he was at Syracuse, we were able to do this and they won a title because of him. So there's a lot of that Carmelo really doesn't get credit for. And I don't know how that's going to affect his, that word they like to use, that damn legacy over the course of a career.
Well, you know, two words.
I do art this many times. It's who's going to do it. And in Carmelo's case, the New York press demonized Carmelo. And I had no reason why he did that.
Gary, to be fair, it was more Phil Jackson than anybody else because he tried to force his hand and then anything else. But here's the thing with Carmelo. Two words, George Karl, one of the most overrated coaches of all time.
Definitely.
He went out of this was Jeff Fisher. This was Jeff Fisher and VY in basketball. To be quite honest, I don't think he was given enough credit when he played in New York. And I understand where Art might be talking about in regards to Vagabond, but see, you got to be careful with that because you got to look at history. Do you look at Bob McAdoo as a vagabond? Do you look at somebody like Chauncey Billups, a former teammate of his, by the way, who went through a few teams before he was able to find his niche? You know, there are a lot of guys in the league, a Jamal Crawford type, that, you know, had to go through about two, three, four different teams before they were able to find their niche. Yeah. Now, some of it is on the player, but a lot of times, at least to me in the modern day NBA, where coaches are still running the show, and look, George Karl went out of his way to sabotage Carmelo's career, even after Carmelo left. And see, when you make it personal, then I lose all objectivity because he made it personal in regard to him and Kenyon Martin because you know when there was a point when they got to the Western Conference Finals they went all in, they brought in AI, they had Kenyon Martin, they had Chauncey Billups, and they couldn't get by the Lakers because the Lakers were strong, and basically it was all, you know, Karl basically said, I can't win with this guy. Now, it's funny. The first couple of years after he left, they had a better record. But here's the thing. They never got back to the Western Conference Final.
Yeah.
And see, it's, you know, again, my thing has always been, you got to look at the whole picture, because there are a lot of guys, past and present, that have a Carmelo-type career, and they're looked upon in a different, in a much better light. And see, this is where, you know, looking at this season being the 75th anniversary, this is where I think, whether you're a non-basketball fan or a full-fledged basketball fan, NBA-wise, you need to look at the whole picture. Look, we could do 2 hours on who should be on the 75th team or not. That's a two or three. As I said, that's a two Kool-Aid drink conversation in and of itself.
With the fact that you had guys
that were on the 50th team but are not on the 75th team.
Yep, that's a good one. Yes,
but,
and yes, Kool-Aid and a peanut butter sandwich.
Absolutely. I mean, it's look, you know, my thing is, whenever you have these sort of milestone years, like I said the same thing when the NFL's 100th came up a few years ago and what have you, we're in an information age now where it's laziness to say, well, I didn't know, because there's information out there between the internet and YouTube and all this other stuff. It doesn't take much to do a little bit of research on these folks. But see, unfortunately, we're in an age now where everybody has a take, and a take is more important than facts. That's the problem. See, well, see, therein lies the problem. Therein lies the problem. Because see, you know, when you allow those nasty facts to get in the way of your argument, then there's a problem. And see, unfortunately, that's become all the norm now for a lot of these sports. I don't even know what to call them anymore. Arguments or analysis, but see, it's again. It's not like the information isn't there. It is. And the 2-3 minutes it takes for people to do their senseless rant, they could spend the same 2 minutes looking up information, because it's there. It's there, yep. Especially now, because there's just way too many of these one-sided conversations. And I don't know if basketball is the worst, but at least to me it seems like that, because
I did argue with a guy about Will Chamberlain this fool trying to tell me they play the game as the blender. And then, are you out of your mind?
God takes care of fools and babies, and he ain't no baby. But
that's right.
Even for a game that, you know, was, you know, very unique, and again, was played at the Hershey, you know, for whatever reason, it was played at the Hershey Arena. But again, it probably speaks more to how the NBA was at that period of time in the 60s,
exactly,
as opposed to now. I will say this. I get tired of folks that keep trying to say he didn't have the same sort of players in his era. I don't buy into that. Now was he a giant among men? Well, absolutely. But there were great players now. You know, you had the Walt Bellamy's and the Nate Thurmans. Hell, his teammate Al Addles was a great. Look, the sad thing, you know, looking at that game from the perspective of a Knicks fan, at that time the Knicks had never had a dominant center in their history at that time. And, you know, the thing you have to remember, a year later they drafted a fair to middling ball player out of Grambling by the name of Willis Reed about a year or so later. And you know,
Reed and Bellamy at one time.
Yes, matter of fact, Bellamy was the first round pick. Willis was the second round pick. So they realized that, you know, for see, what now? I will say this. Now, when we grew up watching the NBA, it was more of a center-oriented league.
Yeah.
Easily now, it is now a guard-oriented league. Now, if you have a good center, yeah, that's all well and good, but you don't necessarily have to have a great, great center. You know, when Shaq...
Is the NBA going back to the center again? Because I look at Doncic and other guys, but Denver, are they going back to center again?
I don't think so. I think those guys are just glorified power forwards, to be quite honest.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think glorified power forwards because I will say this. Other than the reigning MVP, they don't rebound enough for me for even them to be considered big men.
Yes, and let me go a little further with that because, Gary, what you were talking about, rebounding, Bill Russell rebounded, Nate Thurman rebounded, you know, Joe Caldwell rebounded. You had rebounders, and you also had a rash of big men that were big men. You know, we went through a period where a lot of big men were fragile. Remember Greg Olson? Remember Sam Bowie? You know, these were all big guys. These were all big guys whose bodies didn't finish forming and didn't finish growing. Whatever the heck happened, there were flaws that did not allow their bodies to hold their weight, and their careers suffered for it. So,
hey, Mike, Bill Walton.
Pembroke Burroughs,
you know, look, some guys aren't able to make that transition from college to the pro. And also, when you go from one sort of Siskasee, as good a player as he was in college, he was sort of one-dimensional. Let's to be fair.
He was fair, you know.
So he was a project coming into the league. So the fact that he never really took it to the next level. Now I go back to Walton. Now yes, Walton won the title in 77. You know they beat that Sixer team. But the thing is, for the most part, Walton's NBA career pales in comparison to his college career. And a lot of it had to do with the injuries.
That's right.
The foot injuries really killed his career.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he hung on for a while and was a decent sixth man for about a year or so. But even then, he was. And see, it's probably not fair to compare his college career to his pro career. But again, you have to remember the kind of hype that he was getting going into the pros.
When he went to Boston, I said, here we go.
But Gary, you know what the difference is that the man and the play and people playing and how they were situated. Bob Lanier was a legit big guy. He played for a long time. He grew. He stayed growing at St. Bonaventure, came into the Detroit Pistons, and had a lengthy career. Nate Thurman had a lengthy career. You know, there were only X number of guys whose bodies were able to take the weight, in all honesty. And that includes Reed, Bellamy, and others.
Yeah.
But there weren't that many others to give the league balance. So that's why a dominant big man really was a dominant big man. That's why
it brings even more to light one of the most underrated players of all time, and it's really incredible to say this, because as great as he is, I think he's been taken for granted for years, and that is, you know, Lew Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem did 20 years.
Yes, he did.
Now, granted, those last 2 years was not pretty, but he did 20 years. And when you think of his contemporaries, you know, he outlasted pretty much all, not all, well, pretty much all of them, because, you know,
no,
Chamberlain was already established by the time he was there. So he was near the second. But think of Phoenix took Neil Walk over him. Exactly. And he had a okay, you know, NBA career. Now let's face it.
He was right. Yeah, it's just okay.
Yeah, but see, think about it. You think the fortunes of the Phoenix Suns might have been a little bit different if Jabbar goes to Phoenix instead of Milwaukee?
No question. And
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or a.k.a. Lew Alcindor, which is what he was when he first came to the league. If Lew Alcindor changed the game. What I mean is this.
You could not dunk.
The NBA and the NCAA banned the dunk. Why?
That's right. But Gary,
Lew Alcindor was so dominant.
Never mind the dunk. Think about Jabbar throwing that sky hook for 20 years.
That's what we changed the game.
The sky hook is essentially a different form of jump shot. You shoot it moving, and you shoot it jumping. So, basically, Kareem was taking jumpers for 20 years and hitting. And the same toll it took on his body would have been no different than, say, a jump guard. Say somebody like a Hal Greer, who used to shoot his jump shots from the line. So that wear and tear just goes back to how somebody was able to, A, take care of themselves, and, B, how they were built. You know, we can't say that he was an exception, because Sam Bowie was supposed to be all that good. Greg Olsen was supposed to be good, but something happened. Their bodies did not finish. You know, how can you tell
Michael, that's why the 100 points will never be broken again.
Yeah, I can say that.
Never,
I agree.
Never.
Yeah. It's going to have to take an even more of a unique night that Chamberlain had, because you got to remember Chamberlain, who was a sort of a notorious free throw shooter, he was like 24 of 26 that night.
No, 28. He shot 28 of 32 that night.
Yeah, 28 of 32.
But it was a high percentage night. Chamberlain was never someone who shot that high free throw percentage ever. You know,
KMBR Radio did a thing on Chamberlain a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
In the interview, it was an interview, like about 40-minute interview with Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
And Chamberlain, that guy drove from Philadelphia to Hershey by himself.
I don't know.
When he got there, it was like early, so he went to the local whatever diner and stuff, and played pinball in a pinball machine. And he played pinball, and that pinball machine, he broke the record of pinball machine. He said, okay,
people, you know, people forget what kind of an athlete he was. I mean, you know, literally he was ahead. I mean, literally he was way ahead of his time in when he was. Also, people forget this was the guy that was like a long jump champion as a high schooler.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if he had been allowed to compete in the Olympics with without, you know, other than basketball. He might have, he probably, at the very least, he comes away with maybe another with a gold medal or whatever. Volleyball was probably his greatest sport as well. But see, again, and see, these are the times when you would think that some of these folks who are in our field would, you know, when you know, instead of sort of poo-pooing the 76, whatever, you know, look deeper. But unfortunately, you know, everybody takes the easy way out in the sense of...
Well, they want the got you moment.
Yeah.
They got your moments for sure, Gary, but
I think
when you sit back and look at some of this stuff, you know, they're in awe, as Tony always talks about, innovative, imitated. Nobody can imitate what Will did. You know, the fact that he came out there and they had to change the rules regarding the lane and everything else, you know, that was all because of Will. Just like you were saying, the dunk stuff, all that was because of Kareem. They didn't want Kareem to come in and dominate because that was the mindset. You know, if he had been a white player, oh, yeah, dunk all you want. But no.
Tiger Woods for golf, to a certain extent, the Williams sisters for tennis. You know, hey, after Gibson did his 1.12 in 68, what did they do? They lowered the mound.
That's it.
You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, excellence to a certain extent, especially black excellence in athletics, is never rewarded. If anything, it's ridiculed. You know, Mr. Bonio, the skater.
Yeah.
Now, you know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you know, the thing about this is that, again, all you got to do is look at your history. All you have to do is look at history. I always tell folks, you know, the Negro Leagues played night ball before the majors. They came up with the quote-unquote tools of ignorance for catchers before then. They began the barnstorming more so out of necessity. But the thing is, it actually worked to their advantage because it put more of their game out there. But see, the great triumph of Kareem Skyhook is that he could have very easily said, you know what, they're conspiring against me and what have you. So what did he do? He basically came up with arguably the most devastating offensive weapon in all of sports. To be
ever.
Quite, if you really sit down and think about it, no one here's the tragedy. You would think that a bunch of other centers would have taken that and said, you know, I need to check that out. And no one ever, at least center wise, the sad thing is somebody like a Magic Johnson, who was an innovator in and of himself, was the only one who actually used the sky hook in his repertoire. And to me, that speaks badly of basically every center that came after him. Shaq included.
He wanted to coach. That's right. He wanted to coach. What do you think it would have been like had he taken a young blood under his wing and showed him how to shoot the skyhook?
Yep.
Dwight, you know what? I think we would look at somebody like a Dwight Howard or an Anthony Davis or any of these other guys in a different light if they had just – and see, I think – and this is where I go after the modern players because they bought into all the BS about Kareem being aloof and Kareem being unapproachable or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we've heard several stories where Kareem went to guys and said, you know, let me just stay. I guess they have to take this for about 4 or 5 minutes. And everybody, you know, everybody wants to dunk or everybody wants to shoot threes or what have you. And
well, Kareem, give up here. Up here to Golden State about 8 years ago, 9 years ago.
Sure.
And they literally ignored him. What are you all doing?
Yeah.
Something like what Kareem did, you have to work at it. Even if it can seem an easy thing to do, even if it can seem like, you know what, if I shoot this right, no one's going to be able to block it. So if I miss, it will be on me. So all that means is that I have to practice and practice until I get trajectory and every other factor that goes in right, and then it becomes second nature. That's what Kareem did. I mean, we saw him throw that how many times? And we also saw him throw the skyhook to win. Now, I forget which game it was, but it was a playoff final.
Game five at the Boston Garden in the 74 finals. I know it's on here. It ended with the skyhook, and it made him go back to Milwaukee for game six.
Exactly. Now, the confidence to throw it, first of all, the unorthodoxy in seeing it, like, that shit's not going in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see swish, and it's like, oh, shit. So we know it can be done. You have to work at it. And the only one who seemed to want to work at it was Magic. And he won a game once with a baby skyhook, if you remember right.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody wanted to put the work in. And Kareem was in coach mode for a good 6 or 8 years where somebody, somewhere could have said, okay, I want to learn this. And it never happened. The opportunity never came. And it's because of assholes who tried to control it because they wanted to put a clamp on greatness. And this is what generates the shut the fuck up movements. Like Tony said, Kareem throws the skyhook to win. Boom. Shut the fuck up. If you haven't done it, you know you can't. And we see moments like this all the time. It's like, why won't somebody say to themselves, I can do this. I have the skills. I'm being taught. No.
Yeah.
You're also being taught by a black man. It's like, oh, wait a minute. No, I got a problem with that, with something.
Yeah.
And that's also something that holds folks back.
Sure. You know, as much as I do appreciate the modern game, I get exasperated by it too because I won't go so far as to say it's almost 2-3 happy, but you know let's put it this way: as much as you can win a game for it, you can shoot your way out of a game with it as well.
Think about the three-point play, which I don't think this is going to last too much longer. And the reason why is because individuals have to train, really train for doing this. I don't believe that the athlete of today is going to do what Steph Curry did. Let me explain it deeper here. Steph Curry is year number two, year two of the Golden State Warriors. Went to the gym. He gained 10 pounds of muscle. I mean, complete muscle to do what he's doing. Now, my question is, what 18 and 19 year olds are going to do that?
Well, to be fair, Gary, I think there are some, but I think, unfortunately, what winds up happening is by the time they get to the league, so to speak, the work ethic isn't there for whatever reason.
That's right.
Now you can say, well, they don't do enough time in college. But see, here's my thing. And see, again, if I sound like the old man in the mountains, you know, paint them pink for me. But this was this was what the G League was supposed to be about.
Yes.
The whole thing about the G League was that this was it was the D League. It was the NBA Developmental League.
What is the only one that you are using it correctly, I believe?
Well, yeah.
The Warriors are the only ones. Oh, sorry. The Warriors were the only ones that had the proper personnel for it. That's really what this is about. It wasn't Steph Curry. It was also Thompson. It was also others who had learned to shoot it from watching them in practice. And remember, you know, he came from a shooting family. His father could shoot.
Right.
His father was hitting three. So this was something that was passed on to him. If Del Curry was Shaft, Steph Curry was the son of Shaft. And that's what was going on.
There you go.
You met the son. That's what they did. That was their game.
And don't forget the little brother. Well, I guess you can call him Baby Shaft, I guess, because he's Carrizo niche as well. You know, and to me, shooting in the NBA is like running the ball in the NFL. You're never going to get away from that. There's no way you're going to be able to get away from it.
That's true.
But you also have to put it in its context. Now, unfortunately, the NFL has basically tried to make running backs like a dime a dozen, which to me is asinine. But again, that's another two great Kool-Aid conversation to have. But in the NBA, you never get now. I go back and forth. Now, me personally, I don't think I can say now. Steph Curry is great. I don't know if I can call him the greatest shooter in NBA history. To me, that's something that you really. You would literally have to sit down and watch and read and discuss. See, this is where I would like to get the old heads in the room and get a consensus. Because, see, the biggest problem I think a lot of folks have with the 75th anniversary team is while they give a lot of deference to from the guys from back in the day, there are some modern players that are on that team, and I say to myself, I don't see it. I'm not going to name specific names, but there's some guys that I look on that 75th team and I say, all time? I don't get it.
And it's very obvious when you take one guy off of one team, it's very obvious what he's doing.
Well, again, my thing is, to me, the 75th team was the easier to do. You keep the 50 that are already on there, and you basically, add 25 guys.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, it's basically you're adding. Ninety-four for the for the 50th anniversary team.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. 96. Let's just say 96. So basically, from 96 to 2002, you get the best 25 from there. That's all.
I'd get 24. I'd get 24 because you make Bob McAdoo immediately number 51, and then get 24 players.
Look, to me, you know what? I didn't want to come out and say. To me, seeing Anthony Davis on that team is like, no, I can't. I can't.
Yeah,
I can't. Mm-hmm. He's the one guy. You know, I try not to call certain, but seeing Anthony Davis on that all 75th team, it's like he hasn't put in enough time, and he hasn't been that much of an impact player
to make.
I mean, again, we're talking about an all-time team. I'm still one of those guys where when I watch a game and I see both teams are basically in their road jerseys. Look, home whites, road grays, or road dark, whatever. That's all. I don't ask for much.
I'm gonna tell you, never forget this. The Baltimore Bullets were wearing orange, right? Back in the Monroe days.
Yeah, they wore
orange jerseys, right?
Yeah.
The Sixers had red jerseys, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
So the Sixers are going down to Baltimore, and I never forget this. The Sixers brought their red uniforms to Baltimore.
Right.
Baltimore was red orange. On color TV, I could tell who was who.
Sure. You put it this way. That was your first LSD experience, because it's like, what in the hell is going on here? You know, whenever I watch a Knicks home game, and they're wearing their dark jerseys, I get angry. Look, they're in the Garden. You wear your white New York. And you have New York written across your chest, and let's go. Mm-hmm. Now, if and when you lose, you know, we know whatever. But stick true to the tradition, you know?
Yeah.
That's all, you know. And look, now everybody has a
fourth. Brooklyn, they have a gray uniform, a black uniform, a blue uniform. A rainbow uniform.
And see, now remember, the Nets were red, white, and blue for years.
Right.
Now, once they became Brooklyn, they've become black and white. And I guess, okay, no problem. But could you just, you know what, could maybe like 5 nights a year, you pull out the old Dr. J jerseys? Just once?
They did a version of the old jersey last night.
But see, here's my thing. Do the old colors, but you can still put Brooklyn across your chest.
That's right. I got no problem with that.
But go with the old, you know, look, the Sixers go back and forth for the most part. Except for those years with Iverson, when they were doing like the off black and the dark brown with red and chartreuse and all that other stuff. For the most part, the Sixers have been red, white, and blue for years. They've done different variations, but their blue, even their dark blue. They had a high dark blue, and then they had a darker dark blue. But they always stayed true to the red, white, and blue. I mean, look, the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, however you feel about Independence Day or what have you, it was red, white, and blue for Philly.
True.
I got to give Philadelphia their props because the uniform they had this year with the spectrum colors on the side of the uniform. I got to get that.
Absolutely.
That was very smart because the spectrum will always be in
Even look, even the night when Wilt had his 100th, red, white, and blue.
That's right.
Red, white, and blue. And they were the Warriors. They were the Warriors.
They were the Philadelphia Warriors then.
Now, the Warriors now, I give, now, the Warriors, their throwback jerseys, they go back, you know, I like the ones where they have San Francisco across the logo.
Yeah.
Because that,
yeah.
And they have, you know, it literally, it's like the old Nate Thurman, early years in San Francisco, you know,
mm-hmm.
some teams honor their heritage a little bit better than others. I look at now, as much as I hate those green and white bastards in Boston. Look how far away they've gotten from their old, you know, jerseys at times.
Yeah.
Some of those things that you see them wear are just abominations, man.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, for real. I like the jerseys
Matter of fact, they'll go back and they'll wear those old Connie Hawkins jerseys too,
which I
love.
Yeah.
I like those.
Now, the one thing I still have never gotten with the Suns, why their mascot is a gorilla. Make sense of that to me. I don't get that.
I got an issue with that.
I've never gotten that. I mean, yes, I'm sure there are a couple of gorillas in Phoenix. I'm sure of that. But
and I wouldn't date either one of them. But
exactly.
I'm wondering why the NBA had never been taking a test for that. So we could say, okay, you're the Sixers, Ben Franklin's your mascot, we get that. You know, you're the Knicks, Apple is your mascot, okay, the Big Apple.
Orange and blue, white,
the original Knicks jersey is a fat guy in a blue and orange, it's like a town crier almost.
There you go. So how in the wide, wide world of sports do you have the Phoenix Suns and a fucking gorilla?
Even the Bucks had a deer that looked like that he had been sniffing glue. But at least he was a deer, though, you know?
You know, Phoenix had anything, a roadrunner, you know, something. How the fuck do you call a gorilla?
A roadrunner would be more consistent because
of the basketball team.
I'm very surprised because, like, you know, they have Hispanic night. I'm very surprised that they never were the Soul, the Phoenix Soul. The Sun, because Soul is Sun for Spanish.
That's
during Cinco de Mayo, they have a uniform called Del Sol.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I've seen the Knicks wear Nueva Yorker.
They wore Nueva Yorker.
Not to go too far off, but if you ever want to piss off a Met fan, let them wear those Los Mets jerseys at home.
Yes.
Them folks from Queens get all upset when they see those Los Mets jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
But see, to
go back to where Art was with this in the beginning, see, that's just bad marketing.
It really is.
It's like, okay, you know, I don't want to see those little dingy fucking bats on bat day. Spend the money. You got 30,000 people in the stands, and you got like 10,000 of them holding up bats. That's what you want. Those kids are going to play baseball when they go home. You know?
The only thing is, Mike, you're going to have to put 5,000 FBI agents in the stands, too, because there's going to be at least 6 or 7 fights that's going to break out. But that's another story.
I remember bad day. We had to go 2 hours early to get in.
The line was ridiculous. I know the line was like that. I've been there at least one bat day.
Yeah.
And when you came home with your bat, you were playing with it.
Didn't teams used to give away gloves too?
Yes. Bat day, glove day, cap day, ball day,
jacket day. I know. Back in the day in August, the Mets would always give like school stationery with a Mets logo on it, and I prayed to my pagan god to go to one of those games. Never got a chance to one of those games.
Never had a dinner either. I know. That's a shame.
Remember the key ring day?
Yes. Yes. Y'all went through all that stress.
Guys, I still have that key ring.
Oh yeah, that's a nice little ring. Look, I didn't even have keys, and I wanted that thing. You know?
I got it.
Oh God! Yeah.
The only promotion I wound up going to was later in my life. I went to. They had a strawberry sundae the year after strawberry won the. The year after he won the Rookie of the Year award, when they gave him his award that year, that Sunday they had everybody had a strawberry sundae.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
From the time the Mets came in, the year of the World's Fair in 1965, and they had their line going out the Willis Point, the number 7 train, the blue train.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was about the Mets, and they got help literally from the city because. The blue trains were different. They were new, you know.
The whole area where
the World Fair was, that was new. But you also knew that the baseball team was out there. And remember, the Mets weren't rocking anybody's world. The Mets were losing games like a mob. They had lost 100 games at least once between 62 and 65.
The first year in Shea, they outdrew the Yankees. And all the Yankees were the American League freaking champions, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. That's right. They had outlasted the evil empire simply because they were fresh, they were new, and it seemed like the whole city was trying to promote them. And they had everybody on their side. The Mets were the new guys, and the Yankees were the traditionalists. And the
Mets. The New York Mets outdrew the Yankees for 21 years out of 40.
Well, it was the CBS era Yankees from 64, you know, when they lost to the Cardinals in 64 till they got to the World Series again with Billy Martin in 76. The Mets either outdrew or drew just as many. You got to remember, those assholes before the new Yankee Stadium opened up were playing home games in Shea Stadium.
They, I remember that too.
Yeah.
Why are the Yankees playing in Shea Stadium?
You know what always bothered me about that? I don't know if you ever know this. When the Mets first came to town, they asked the Yankees, you know, could we play here the first couple of years before our stadium opens up? And the Yankees told them to kiss their, you know, pinstripe ass. That's basically why they went to the Polo Grounds. And to me, that's the main reason. You know, I'll be honest with you. That's one of the main reasons I've hated the Yankees because of that, because, you know, 3 years. And see, what made it worse, the Mets was like, sure, y'all can come and play. I was like, hell no. Yeah. Tell them all to go to Jersey, you bastards.
The New York Giants tried that 8 years earlier.
Hey, as bad, look, you know it got bad when they were playing at the Yale Bowl. I mean, it was a nightmare in here seeing the Giants play here, man. And remember, there was that one season, I think it was 1975, where the Mets, Jets, Yankees, and Giants all played in Shea Stadium. It was never the same. It was never the same. Yeah, because Giants Stadium opened up in 76. The new Yankee Stadium opened up in 76. And then, you know, of course, the Jets, you know, I don't know, you know, it was amazing. A guy who I used to work with wrote a book about that season, because that was even more unique than having the three Major League Baseball teams in one town.
True.
Basically had four teams sharing one stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how
Giants
they did it. Well, no, they did. They did 1 year in Shea. It was 75. Because see, the contract. Because see, they got tired of Yale dictating to them, because they played in 73 and 74 at Yale Bowl. And in 75, they just said, the hell with Yale. We'll play at Shea for a year, and we'll be at our place in another year. But, 1975, the Mets, Jets, Yankees, and Giants all played their home games at Shea.
Yeah. So, Tom, what was the year where the plane was flying overhead and it said, 15 years of lousy football, we've had enough?
I think it was like the second year at Giants Stadium. Well, no, the third, because that was 78, because that was the year of the fumble and McVay. Basically 3 years mm-hmm. into the new stadium, the fans, because remember, they had, you know, they went through their CBS period like the Yankees, in a sense, where
they didn't play
the championship game or playoff game until 64. When they finally broke through in 81, matter of fact, with them and the matter of fact, it took the Jets beating the Packers on the last game of the season for the Giants and Jets to both get in. And
when they had both home games, and they had
the funny thing is, and this is a story I just heard about, that playoff game that the Jets had after beating the Packers. They beat the Packers in the last regular season game to get into the playoffs, and then they hosted Buffalo that next week. But the thing was, the Jet fans tore down the goalposts. They actually had to get a makeshift goalpost from the old Yankee Stadium to have their goalpost for a playoff game.
Yes.
Crazy. It's crazy, you know. And, you know, so much for New York being the most, you know, metropolitan, you know. Yes.
Yeah.
That's another. That's another sports myth that needs to be stomped into the ground.
That weekend, the Giants played on Saturday.
Well, it was a regular season. They were playing the Cowboys. They played the Cowboys on a Saturday afternoon, and they basically had to win, and then they had to wait and see if the Jets would beat the Packers, because if the Jets beat the Packers, they both got in. And, of course, you know, the Jets stomped on them in that game. But that was, you know, I think that's still the only time both teams made the playoffs in the same season.
That's interesting. But you know what, Gary? If we got to go back to what your original premise was, Tony, you including this, when's the last time you seen a bunch of kids get together and play baseball? Unorganized. I'm not talking about Little League. I'm talking unorganized. That's like, yo, everybody just catch up.
You know what? I think I got to go back to when. I think I got to go back to when me and my friends would go to some place to play ball, and I'm talking like early 70s, late 60s. You know, and this is, and again, this is not, like you said, non Little League, because, you know, we have
not
one of the only
not faction, exactly.
Yeah, it's a band.
I remember
like I always use the 1971 All-Star game, the one in Detroit, you know, where Reggie hit the light tower, and six Hall of Famers hit home runs, and Doc Ellis and Vida Blue started the only time you had two black starting pitchers in the All-Star game. I remember that night I'm in the backyard playing catch with a friend of mine, and my mom calls me up at 7:30 and said, hey, get upstairs and take your bath so you can watch the game. Because he allowed me to watch, like, there were certain, like, that. I had to sort of beg and borrow for Monday Night Football,
but certain
baseball games she would let me watch, and the All Star game was that. Now, ironically, that game was like, I mean, it was done at warp speed back then. It was like two minutes and 2 hours and 15 minutes, and it was over at like 10:30, and it was, and if I remember correctly, it was an 8 o'clock start. So, but again, that's you know, pre 89 different commercials, and you didn't have half the marketing that you had mm-hmm. now, and actually the All-Star game actually meant something. And see, that game to me has always been a litmus test, because everybody that hit a home run in that game wound up being a Hall of Famer. And of course, you know, you had the six historical significance of Doc Ellis and Vida Blue starting as well. But see, that's my era, that's where I became a baseball fan.
That was the first All-Star game I missed because we were at summer camp, and summer camp that we had really We all wanted to do the game, and you're not gonna do that.
Hey, it's you know, you do a YouTube search, it's on there. You can watch the whole game.
That was the first All-Star game I ever missed.
Yeah. And you know, that it was still something to be able to watch. It was still something to be able to see, you know, your guys, you know, in the All-Star game, it's, you know, now you're right, Michael, other than like Little League and whatever around here, most of the time when I see kids playing, it's either playing hoops or playing football. A lot of it is on baseball because they don't push it now. Luckily, like I said, you know, because of the neighborhood that I live in, you know, the Walter Pop Smith League has been around for over 50 years on and off. And they actually got to Williamsport in 74, and they were one of several teams that wind up getting beat by those bullies from Taiwan along the wouldn't be so bad, but some of them guys were smoking and brought their husbands and wives to the game. I was like, come on already, you know? Kids got 5 o'clock shadow, and it's only 3:15.
It was three little ladies that they're talking Yeah. All three is the team that won the championship were taken away from him. All three of them were black.
Minority, yeah, or minority or Hispanic, because remember the whole Danny Almonte thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's
see where Danny messed? See where Danny messed up is that he left his cigarettes in the back that the in the in the
drink house.
Wow.
Danny
gets
cigarettes. No,
he left his cigarettes in his night in his Mad Dog 2020. If he hadn't, you know, Mike. If Woody had just left his cigarettes in his Mad Dog 2020, this would have never happened.
So we all agree that by the mid-70s, kids getting together to play baseball was kind of, no, it didn't happen anymore. So
not in our neighborhood, at least. Yeah.
We'll say conservatively, almost 50 years have gone by since kids got together and said, you know, let's play ball. Now, we played stick ball sometimes, too. And you
mm-hmm.
play money against block against block.
Sure.
Man, shit like that. Then we did that all more because of the business aspect rather than playing the fucking game because we were trying to make that money. But having said that, guys would not just get together for the sake of playing ball. And my mother was a softball pitcher, so she loved baseball. The fact that we got tired from it. We got tired after a while. It's gotta reflect back on baseball, period. They did not care about promoting to younger players, to kids, and let's read this real. Black players. They didn't give a fuck about us.
Yeah. They got shamed into it. See, the NFL always had NFL films and look. After, you know, love him or hate him, when Stern got in there, the first thing he did was he marketed the hell out of the league. So I give him that his due in regard to that. But baseball always had to get shamed into do. Now, here's the thing. I do remember, like, you know, we talked about all those promotional days and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
The individual teams would always promote their game. And also, if you were lucky enough to have, say, one or two minor league teams in your area, there was also, see, I've always said, in 1981, the then West Haven Whitecaps, who were the affiliate, I'm sorry, West Haven A's, were affiliates for the A's in 1981. And that's basically how I got through the strike. You know, I got a chance to see, like, a Shooty Babbitt. I got a chance to see Mike Moore. Yeah. I got a chance to see, now mind you, there was minor league ball as far back as like 72 here. So I saw like Jim Rice and Fred Lynn and Otto Velez and Ron Guidry, because the West Haven team was a Yankee affiliate up until 1978. And then they were a year where they were independent, and then from 1980 on, they were the A's affiliate before they wound up leaving town. And that's the missing. Luckily, there's always been minor league ball here at some level. Now we've got the Yard Goats up in Hartford now. There was a team in Bridgeport, but they left town since then. And there's a Tiger affiliate up in. It's a long, embarrassing fucking story. I don't even want to get into it. This way, they didn't even play in their stadium.
Sacramento, Rivercats.
Albany had the River Rats. Mm-hmm. And I like that. The River Rats. Well, that was a cool name, but.
Now, Gare, how far are you from, like, say, the nearest California League team?
Modesto is Sacramento.
Oh, those are the closest ones? Oh, okay. Now, is Modesto still with the A's, or are they with somebody else?
San Jose Giants.
Oh, that's right. Now, is Modesto still with the A's, or are they with someone else?
Oh, Modesto is now Tigers.
Oh, the Tigers. Oh, okay. Okay, but they're still, but the Modesto is still there, though.
Yeah.
Good. Good for them. Hey.
From the A's. No, mm-hmm. The A's are not.
Hey,
yeah,
considering
the Giants have two, the A's have one.
Mhm. Well, considering that, you know, considering that Adam Clayton Manfred has been trying to get rid of the minor leagues basically from day one, I'm glad that they still have a team because they've cut and slashed so many of these traditional leagues now. It's pathetic.
Yeah. Really?
Well,
yeah,
it's bad. It's bad. It's very. It's, you know, at one point you had about five or six teams here in Connecticut. Now, I think you got this. I think you have two or three now.
Wow.
Well,
so
we had Thunderbirds, and they're gone.
Well, you might. Mike, it's tougher to be an independent now because, you know, the thing, how you make your money is that when you're affiliated with a team, they, you know, they're able to, you know, they're able to help. Now, the thing with the Bridgeport team here, the Bridgeport team was in the actual independent league. And where they would now the teams would ferret out certain players, but they did not now because see, we had like a from. You know, I want to make sure I get this right. From night when the Rockies came into fold,
right.
their first Eastern League team was here in New Haven. They actually back to the Eastern League championship their third year. The New Haven team did great, but Yale started scrimping off and whatever, and they wound up leaving town. Now, Bridgeport, they were part of that league that had. Remember the team that had Jose Canseco and Ricky Henderson playing for them? It was like the Long Island Surf, I think it was.
Yeah.
They were playing there. They were in that league. Now, see, the only problem with that league is it's independent. So they're literally like, it was an 18 league. Those are eight independent contractors. And and see, you could do it, but you are going to lose. I mean,
no money.
You know going in, you're going to lose basically your shirt, your mama's shirt, your kid's shirt. And it's a shame because.
Well, aside from yard goats. that's one of those things that pops in your head at 3 o'clock in the morning. You just start laughing. Everybody looking at you like,
put it this way. Remember how I referenced the old Bucks logo with the because I got high. This goat basically, put it this way. This goat just is an indignant goat. That's all I can say. Indignant.
I love it. Oh man. Well, aside from indignant goats, whether they're high or not, we are going to get back to our original form and bring out some more funk. As the season's changing, we should change too. Life. Get you to tap a foot a little bit and enjoy. So Sunday night, 9 p.m., the book turns as we continue funk from A to Z as we make our point with funk, R&B, and hip-hop, 9 p.m. Eastern.
All right, what you got,
Jody?
What you got cooking up in there?
You know, I hate to think. Yeah. Yard goat soup. Mike. New England boiled yard goat soup on top of that. Well, you know, it's really, well, put it this way. We're no longer under martial law now, because it looks like the UConn women are going to actually make the tournament and actually get a pretty decent seed. And the men may actually sneak in as well. You know what the funny thing is with the women, and I'm the only one that's been saying this out loud, because of the lowered expectations this year, this could be a year where they finally break through and win the damn thing. I'm not. They're clearly now. Clearly, they're not the best team. But
are they official dark horse?
Well, they're probably
is that
looking.
You? Is that you?
Yeah. Put it this way. I think right now, if you believe the bracketology idiots, I believe they're like a third seed, which is not terrible. But of course, you know, when you're used to getting a number one seed. Now they're still going to have games up here in Bridgeport and Hartford, either Bridgeport or Hartford, I believe. So they're still going to be able to see, and you know, the women are turning the corner, but they still they still have to play at a lot of these traditional venues so they can get some bank. Hopefully that's something that's going to change. But to me, the one thing, I guess we're a week away from the pairing for both coming out. You know, we talked about this all year. You know, we saw it with the NFL, we saw it with college football, but let's put it this way: there's going to be some Jimmy Hoffa sightings during these tournaments. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because there is no clear cut. This is the best team. The only thing I fear is that we're going to get some sort of Steven Spielberg thing where they give Coach K a title on the way out the door.
You know,
well,
they're going to
see,
they're gonna try.
Did you see what he said? He wants to go to the Chicago region, not the Philadelphia region.
You know what? And people in hell want ice water. The hell with him.
That's right.
Hey, but if he gets in Chicago, I am done.
Well, let's put it this way: they still got to win. And you know, look, they have struggled this year. I mean, they keep propping them up. They keep propping them up like they're title contenders and what have you. Now, I'm going back and forth as to whether I want to watch this last game at Pizza Shit Arena in Durham. But I'm just like, you know, get them out, you know, get them, the sooner they get eliminated, the better I can enjoy the tournament.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah,
well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, little break in.
Not a problem.
All right.
I can't say that until they start playing. Until they start playing, they can go to hell.
All right.
You know. All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Was not so long ago.
Anthony and the Imperials. Next week, we will be doing boy bands from Little Anthony to boys to men. Little Anthony to boys to men. LPGA, this weekend, the World Championship in Singapore. Thailand, Patty, the Westerns, leads with bogey free round. 67 with a large group behind her. PGA, last week is the PGA National Golf Championship with Mr. Stepka winning, beating St. Andre by one stroke. This week is the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Puerto Rico Open. WTA, Djokovic will play the French Open after vaccine requirement lifted. The Open 6 EME, John Leon France. Alberto GPA, this weekend, the two matches. Next week, there'll be a California BMB Paramus. NASCAR, Kyle Larson wins the Wise Power 400. This weekend, they're in Vegas in the Pennzoil 400. Next week, there'll be a Phoenix with the Royal Mortgage 500. IndyCar gets started this weekend at the Firestone Grand Prix in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's off to Texas with an XL335. 101, last week was the test track week with all new cars coming to test in Spain. Season starts in 2 weeks. Bahrain Grand Prix and Abu Dhabi in November. So the Formula One season will start in 2 weeks in Bahrain. Thank you for the show. We come back next week.